Hello, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with me, Dr. Mary Angela McGuire, on Transformation Talk Radio. During this show, I'll help you practice mindfulness. Most of the principles of mindfulness are very simple, but putting those principles into practice can be devilishly difficult. I'm here to help you become a student of your own mind. I'll share ideas, insights, and tools you can use to release yourself from fearful and negative thinking and live from a place of clarity and confidence. Please join me as we challenge ourselves to change. Nothing But Now starts now. Hi, everyone. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining me today. As you know, the purpose of this show is to support people in their mindfulness journey, which is to bring our full attention to the present moment without judgment. And in the service of that, to become aware of the habits of mind that lead to mindless, reactive behavior. And lately, one of the things I've been talking about is the relationship between mindless reactive behavior and racism. For whites specifically, how is it that a deeply held belief in white racial superiority gets deeply embedded in our consciousness so that it's hard to bring it to conscious awareness in order to change it? Well, one of the things I think is that if you want to change a deeply held belief, you have to be very cautious about and very aware of how you feed your mind. What is it that we consume in our daily lives? And for whites specifically, a challenge is that we have very little interaction sometimes for some of us with African Americans. And what we do see, we see through the media, which means it's often distorted, narrow, and not really serving us well. And it's certainly not serving Black, Indigenous people of color well to have such narrow perspectives shown widely. So my goal with this platform is to bring to conscious awareness that belief in white racial superiority in order to undermine it and change it. And one way to do that is to provide counter narratives, stories from Black Americans about in some ways ordinary and in many ways extraordinary lives. My hope is that this changes how we, those of us who are white, see the world, that we have new information, new ways of looking at other people, our fellow man and woman, and also that for Black, Indigenous people of color who are listeners, that you are hearing stories that resonate with your experience. Stories, again, too infrequently told in our media. So today, my guest is DJ Menefee. DJ and I met several years ago when we both worked at Knox College in Galesburg, Illinois. And today, DJ is the Vice President for Enrollment at Susquehanna University in Selins Grove, Pennsylvania. He's brand new, well, he started in May, but still in some ways brand new to that experience. Prior to going to Susquehanna, he was the Director of Admission at Butler University in Indianapolis, Indiana. And at Butler, he led a team of 25 that enrolled three of the four largest classes in university history. In Selins Grove at Susquehanna, DJ is a member of the senior leadership team, and he oversees the university's Office of Admission and Student Financial Services and serves as the university's strategy and policy leader on all matters relating to enrollment. This is a person with deep experience and knowledge about enrollment in higher education. He also serves as the board as a board director for the National Association of College Admissions Counseling and has served on the executive boards for Indiana and Illinois Associations for College Admissions Counseling. He has a bachelor's degree in business administration from Lees McRae College in Banner Elk, North Carolina, and a master's degree in instructional design and technology from Western Illinois University. Excuse me. DJ, thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate it.
No problem. That was quite the introduction. Thank you so much. It was kind of revisiting and reliving the celebration of time just through the journey of my career, which included a stop in Galesburg, Illinois, along with you and many of our colleagues at Knox College. So thank you for that intro, but also thank you for this opportunity.
Well, it is, it has been an incredible journey that you've been on. To me, you seem very young. I actually don't know how old you are, DJ, but to me, this is a meteoric rise. But I remember you from Knox, when you came to Knox and had a transformational impact on admissions at Knox. So we weren't surprised, my partner and I, who both knew you, when you moved on to Butler and now to be a vice president. I have to say, I'm not surprised. And we're going to talk today about the incredible leadership skills skills and experiences that you have, but we're going to start our conversation by talking about your foundations, about the value of life learning, and then move on to leadership, and particularly leadership through the lens of the COVID pandemic and through this renewed attention that so many people are bringing finally to the issue of systemic racism in our culture. Is that, that sounds like the right agenda to you?
Sounds good. Ready to join in.
Okay. So as I mentioned, I always start my shows with the breathing exercise. And would you mind joining me in that?
I'm following your lead.
Okay, great. So, you know, we bring conscious attention to our breath so that we can feel calm, so that we can enhance clarity, so that we can focus our attention. So what we do with this breathing exercise is that we take three deep breaths. And this is Laura Cameron, who's a mindfulness educator, she calls this the three deep breaths exercise. So the first breath, we just pay attention to the sensation of the breath entering and exiting our bodies. The second breath, we notice any place where we're feeling tension and we relax. And then for that third breath, we set our intention for the moment. What do we need right now? So if you'll join me, breath number one, just pay attention to the sensation of the breathing. Breath number two, relax. And breath number three, let's set our intention. Thank you for joining me in that, everyone, and DJ in particular. So my guest today is DJ Menefee, the Vice President for Enrollment at Susquehanna University in Selins Grove, Pennsylvania, and a higher education leader in a very challenging moment. But DJ, I know that like many people in higher education, especially in that senior leadership level, you've worked and you've moved a lot in your life. So would you talk to us though about the origin story a little bit more, your foundations. So how did you get to be where you are?
Gotcha. Well, I think it's critical to focus and recognize, you know, that we all have a foundation in some capacity, whether that is by faith, whether that is faith and family, whether it's faith, family, and vocation, whatever it might be. And so my initial cornerstone is my faith, being a Christ follower. And I think that keeps me balanced. It keeps me steadfast amongst all the challenges that come our way. Just had a conversation the other day within our leadership team meeting, and it was just this notion that, hey, in December, nobody was thinking about this. Nobody could have anticipated that we were going to be navigating a pandemic. And so as those things come at us, as those curveballs in life come at us, you know, faith is what centers me. You know, the power of prayer is real. Not only in individual and isolation, but also when praying with loved ones, praying with my family, and being mindful that the Heavenly Father, in my mind, is in charge. And anytime we try to take control, things tend to get a little out of whack. And then it's just getting back to center and allowing Him to truly be the leader of my life. The other cornerstone or the other leg of the three-legged stool would be my family. You know, I've been married to my queen, Annabelle Menefee, for 9 years. And, you know, she has been a blessing to my life. She has sacrificed so much for my career aspirations, and every day models the epitome of what it means to be a loving and nurturing parent to our children. And then we have our four children as well. You know, so shout out to Kalani, Kelby, Kyrie and Cadence. You know, I love you dearly, and you are a part of that cornerstone that keeps me motivated and keeps me inspired to just continue to impact change in the world and be a good leader and somebody that they can look up to do things ethically and appropriately in our lives. And then that last piece, which we may go into a little broader later, is just that commitment to ever growing and learning. I think as human beings, we are never quite there. If that makes any sense, we've never quite made it. And so it's always that opportunity to wake up each day and say, how can I improve? How can I get better? And as much as you grow in those moments, you also recognize how much you don't know. And so I think there's that humbleness that comes with it that, you know, even though we may be put in positions to lead and continue to grow in that leadership, that opportunity about leadership isn't necessarily about the technical skills that we have or the knowledge that we have. Sometimes it's our ability to impact the lives of others and to move others in a positive direction. So those are the three things that I think are really critical to the foundation. And then obviously when I think about family, that expands as well. You know, I wouldn't be where I am today without the love and care of my parents and the household that I had with my sister. So, you know, all those things are critical. And my wife shows me that also in the ways in which she depends and uses and thinks about family as a unit.
Mm-hmm. DJ, where did you grow up? I realize I've only known you in your adult life.
Gotcha. So I grew up in Anderson, Indiana, which is probably, depending on who's driving and how fast you're driving, I would say somewhere between 30 and 40 minutes outside of Indianapolis.
Okay. All right. I didn't realize that you were a Midwesterner, because when I saw North Carolina on your background, I thought, oh, maybe you're from the South originally, that you grew up in the South. But no, Anderson, Indiana. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Now, because I did go to school in the South, there are instances where I'm connecting with old colleagues and friends from school or family that I actually have that lives in the South. When I think about my loved ones in Atlanta, there are times when my Southern twang, if you will pick up.
You do have a little bit of that.
Sometimes it comes across. My wife brings that to my attention all the time if I happen to be on the conversation with one of my cousins from Atlanta. So she'll bring that up often.
Uh-huh. It gets a little deeper, doesn't it? Although I grew up in Ohio, and I think this is true of Southern Indiana and Southern Ohio, there are people have that Southern drawl in both of those states.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
Towards that. Yeah. So, well, thank you for telling us about, you know, faith, family, and lifelong learning as the three. I was really intrigued when you said, you know, we never have made it. Because I think in our culture, we talk about making it as though we have reached some end point. So I think that's a very particular worldview to say there's always more to learn. That seems like a real driving force in your work. Is that true?
You know, it is. I think, you know, growing up where I grew up, you know, and thinking about, you know, you have those moments where you feel like you're knowledgeable, you feel like you're doing well in school. But then you realize how smart your colleagues are, how smart your peers are. You then transition off to college if that's a part of your journey. Or even if you're going into a career or a job, you get exposed to others that have other backgrounds, other ways of navigating life, and they've had other experiences. Mm-hmm. And so along that way, it's like, okay, well, how do I continue to develop and foster my best self? Because then if I'm a part of a unit, the only way the unit can be at its best self is if me as an individual is at my best self as well. And then thinking through how does that then impact those around me to make sure that they have the opportunity to be at their best selves. So, you know, lifelong learning is critical. Each day I try to spend some time developing. And so whether that's reading, I really enjoy reading. And I try to set a goal each year that I'm reading somewhere between 50 or 60 books. And it tends to be, you know, within the realm of leadership and management, but it can stretch the spectrum in relationship to the economy. Obviously, within this day and time, it also can include things around racism and our history. And so when I think of things like Stand from the Beginning or How to Be an Anti-Racist or some of those other pieces, those things have been critical in my development now as an adult, because there's so much about my own history that I don't know, let alone the broader history of other things that I haven't yet really thought about. And then also thinking about how the organizations that we are a part of contribute or participate in those development opportunities as well, whether it's the people who really pour into us and the organizations we're a part of, or thinking through the resources that they provide. So, you know, one of the things coming into Susquehanna, as you alluded to, I'm just above 120 days in the space. but one of the things that I thought was a value and that I thought was amazing is the university basically partnered with LinkedIn Learning so that everybody in our community had access to that. And so, you know, for me to have access to that, you know, it's something that I look forward to each week and figuring out what little segments, what little videos within specific areas of content strands can I look at that week to make sure that I'm at 60 minutes a week in that development, but also just thinking through who your mentors are. And within that, how am I modeling to the people that I lead the value of investing in yourself? And so thinking through, you know, mentors and showing them that, hey, I've got all these people that I connect with and call on and check in on, run ideas past, get a sense of how things are going with them, maybe they're going to point out something I haven't thought as critically about. They've had more experience in the spaces, but it still allows me to kind of take it back and then say, now, how does that fit my environment? How does that fit my situation?
Mm-hmm.
No different than understanding everybody has their own learning preferences.
Right.
So everyone can't sit and watch a webinar and get things out of it. Everybody isn't interested in picking up a 400-page book and navigating it and feeling like they're getting a lot of it. So being able to be mindful of what works for me may not work for those or work for everyone else, but helping those that I lead to figure out what is it that works for you and how can I support you and connecting with that mechanism or connecting with that medium so that you are growing as well. And that growth isn't just professional, Mary Angela. It's for me, it's how do I become a better father? How do I become a better husband? You know, how do I become a better son, a sibling? How do I become a better friend, you know, a leader, a partner? So always thinking about all those things as I'm navigating whatever development opportunity is presented or whatever conversation or relationship I'm navigating. And hopefully that is something that is mirrored and I'm modeling for those that are around me.
I think that's such a powerful thing to say, particularly the idea, what I think is can be very difficult in an organizational setting is the idea that I should know. I shouldn't, I'm somehow showing weakness or incompetence if I ask others for ideas or help. And so it seems so critical to me as a leader that you're showing people it's okay to look to others, to look for outside, whether it's mentors or resources in webinars, books, whatever it might be, that you're better off, right? You're going to be more effective if you look outside yourself and don't assume that you're somehow failing if you can't do everything day one on your own.
Yes. And I would just say to that end, you know, a part of my journey has been putting me in positions where I've been called or given an opportunity to lead. And in those instances, I've been given the opportunity to lead others that have much more experience, much more technical skills than I even have today. And it's also that opportunity to say, just because I'm the leader, it doesn't mean I can't step aside and allow them to shine in their area of expertise.
Mm-hmm.
Because if I do that, that's helping the whole.
Right.
And I think I've been given those opportunities to do that, obviously, in my previous two experiences at Knox.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at Butler, but also now in the first 4 months of my time here, truly being able to tap into the skill set and the experiences of the two teams that I lead with their leaders, and being open and transparent when I do or don't know something or when I want to lean on them for their expertise. And so I hope that they see that as empowerment. I hope they see that as valuable. And I also hope they see that as a lens into the way in which I lead.
Right. And that takes a lot of ability to put your ego to the side. And I don't think that's something that we promote very much in our culture. I mean, I think we tend to be, you know, really about protecting our ego. But to say to somebody, I want your expertise. I want you to shine in this moment. That's putting your ego aside. Do you think about it that way?
I do often. But I think the other piece to that, Mary Angela, is this idea that there are so many alternative paths to get to whatever the end goal is. And so I think sometimes we can get caught up in this, it's right or wrong because it's not the way in which we would have done it, which doesn't mean we still can't get to the end goal. And so what I try to do, and again, I say try because it may not always come across as clear. They may not clearly get the expectations and the path forward, but when I'm working with those that lead the teams I'm supporting, I try to set up the framework.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I try to say, okay, you want to do this thing. You want to look at, I think about a conversation today, you know, you want to think about what gifts or swag items we may want to have for prospective students as they navigate their journey this year. I'm okay with you all moving forward with the conversation. What I want you to do is think critically about what budget assets do we have and should we leverage? And I want you to think critically about the timing and to whom we will be giving these things to, and what do we think the impact is going to be. So it's not just buying swag items for the sake of buying swag items and having an inventory. It's really trying to get them to think through. So if we want them to get this sticker what is that sticker going to mean and how are they going to leverage that? What is it going to mean to them? Mm-hmm. What time will we deploy it and what is that supposed to mean in the timing of that deployment? Mm-hmm. And so I hope that they feel like there's a lot of flexibility within picking what swag items, how many swag items, right. The color of the swag items, right. And whoever they think should be receiving them, mm-hmm. But working within that framework. So however they get to the path is fine. Right. As long as it's operating within those thresholds and within those parameters and that framework to end up to the why.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know that my partner also is a senior leader in higher education and like you has had experiences of being new. And so I hear that in what you're saying too is, you know, people get in, we just do it because we do it. We've always done it this way. We don't think anymore about why are we doing it? How are we leveraging assets, right? What's the impact going to be? So have you noticed that it's not your first time being new in a place that there is that challenge of kind of disrupting for people the way things have always been done?
I would say yes. And I think there's some segments to that. There's the practice that has always been the practice because it's been the practice.
Right.
And then I think there's the other piece of them navigating a change in leadership. Right. Oh. And so then they may still also be connected to what they have experienced. And then that's the way it should be. And so, you know, again, I think even in this journey, I've navigated instances where they may have assumed or they share, well, you know, your predecessor would have done it this way.
Right.
Or this is how it's always been handled. And so it's an opportunity to say, thank you for sharing that. I'll take that into context because oftentimes you need to step away and think critically about you have your own assumptions coming in. Like I had a vice president and shout out to Lori Green over at Butler. I had a vice president and I saw what I thought it was supposed to be and how it was supposed to be structured. And I knew what she expected of me and my counterpart in financial aid. But then you transition into a new environment that is a different type of institution that serves a different type of student, much smaller institution, and resources are a little different. And so then you start navigating certain things and it's like, okay, well, this is how it was. This is what I had envisioned. So where are we finding ourselves in the middle to make this work for us within the team that we have?
Yeah, I'm just really impressed with, and I do think this is part of your success, is the capacity to look at and say, and to bring that level of critical thinking to very ordinary practices of everyday life, of how we do things, to look at a fairly detailed level and be willing to ask questions. I think sometimes in life we get afraid to ask questions. It can, you know, it's whether it's because it's not good for our ego or whatever it might be, but sometimes I think leaders can be slow to ask questions, and I think that this is such a great example of that. Bringing that level of critical thinking to every practice in an organization is really powerful, really powerful. So DJ, we're on that leadership cusp. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to shift a little bit, but a little bit deeper on leadership and what you are seeing in this particular historical moment, whether it's in the context of the COVID crisis or in the renewed conversation about systemic racism in America. So folks, thank you for joining us. You're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and we'll be right back.
Yeah, yippee skippy to that, baby. We're not done yet. Some of us are out here to educate and inspire. This year, 2020, is the year we gotta show me the money in the cash flow. I'm Dr. Pat. This is the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By.
Visit thedrpatshow.com.
Message delivery by Lisa Ann. You can't make this stuff up. Tune in every first and third Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Message delivery is an inspirational show about the journey to enlightenment and spirituality. For more information or your own personal message delivery, visit AngelMessagesToYou.com. That's Angel Messages, the number two, the letter U.com.
How many times do you find yourself saying, it was nothing, or just doing my job? when really you knocked it out of the park. How did you get like this? Next time someone tells you great job, you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences one-on-one coaching to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and face success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are. Courage to be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self and how far you can go by being more you. Check out her website, couragetobeseen.com. You have the courage to be seen. See you later.
Raising the vibrations through stimulating conversations while exploring the mysteries of Atlantis and Lemuria on Tales from the Merworld Radio with me, Amirabeth. Join us every second and fourth Thursday at 1 p.m. Pacific on transformationtalkradio.com. Be ready to feel empowered and an active part of the changing earth. For more information about me, visit amirabeth.com.
Learn to love more fearless with me, Kate. Through fun, lively, real conversations as I interview expert guests who have charted a course out of the darkness into the light. Listen live every second and fourth Monday at 9 a.m. Pacific on transformationtalkradio.com. To connect with me and check out my work as an intuitive healer, guide, and coach, visit lovemorefearlessintuitive.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and I'm here today with my guest, Mr. DJ Menefee, who is the Vice President for Enrollment at Susquehanna University in Selins Grove, Pennsylvania. And DJ and I have been talking about his leadership journey and his personal journey. And, you know, one of the things I just want to express some appreciation for, first of all, I suppose, is the fact that you really do use that word mindful a lot, right? I think, you know, bringing clear awareness to what's happening in your work and in your life is just really great to hear. And you really emphasized in your talk about both your journey, DJ, and in your immediate present day work, being a role model for the people you work with and for your family, and of showing people two things really. One is that it's okay to ask for help. It's okay to get information and put our egos aside and allow other people to shine. And that when we talk about professional development, I really appreciated that you said this, that it's not, you're not just helping the people you work with grow as professionals, but grow as whole people. Just as your own commitment to your own learning is for you, I think it sounds like, as a whole person. I just wanted to offer some appreciation for that, because I think it's a very, and a perspective that promotes integrity, you know, a wholeness as a person. So we were going to talk now a little bit more about leadership. And would you talk to us a little bit more about the current moment and the challenges that are arising because particularly, let's start with the COVID-19 pandemic and the impact it's having on the work that you are doing and that you're seeing in higher education at large?
Gotcha. Thank you. So I think where I would start is kind of starting in the narrow lens of the teams that I'm responsible for leading. And so the first thing that I've had to think through often is what behaviors and actions am I seeking? And is what I'm demonstrating is what they can see from me in alignment with that, if that makes sense. So am I mirroring the behavior that I expect of them? The other piece is thinking through all the different things that are coming at the people that we're leading right now. So maybe somebody in the household has lost a job. Maybe they have dependents that no longer have dependent care because the daycare isn't functioning at 100% capacity. So they can't be in the physical workplace in that environment. Maybe they have some ADA accommodations that suggest that they shouldn't be in the workplace in the moment. Or maybe they just have some anxiety about what's still happening and how to navigate that, and their lack of comfort with being back in an environment with a variety of people that, you know, you don't know where they're exactly coming from, or how they are actually navigating this sense of health and safety within the pandemic. So I think the mindful aspect of all of those things running, and often within meetings referencing, let's make sure that we extend each other grace, because there's so many different things happening, and how we respond to those moments, I think means the world to the teams and the folks that we get to work with. You know, you're in a Zoom meeting and, you know, historically there was no chance that somebody's child was going to show up in a meeting, right? Like, that's not typical workplace, but now it may happen. And so how do you respond to that? How do you engage and use that moment to say, it's okay. How are you? And we've had moments where we start to engage with the children as they allow, but it's really recognizing in that moment, yes, like you're serving now duality. You're a parent, you're an e-learning teacher, and you're supposed to be getting, you know, doing this work and this project for us, and recognizing those moments. So thinking about flex schedules, you know, remote work, how do we clean and disinfect the spaces that we have? How often do we provide opportunities to check in? And I think within this space, there are so many different things we can focus on, Mary Angela, that haven't gone right.
Yes.
There's so many different things that, you know, can give us angst, can give, lead us to depression, can stress us out. And so more recently, we, you know, we had a division meeting, and it was just like, let's start with sharing, each person going through and just saying, hey, what are you grateful for? And what are you actually excited about and looking forward to? And halfway through, you know, one of the colleagues just referenced, like, thank you for allowing us to do this, because I think without it, we can get stuck in all the things that aren't going right, but we actually do and may have a lot of other things that we can celebrate. And so it was one of those things where it was like, hey, the purpose of this activity is to say, as we're navigating tough times, there are probably still a lot of things that we can be grateful for, we can be appreciative of, and let's not lose sight of that as we continue to navigate uncertain times. The other piece is just how quickly things are changing with the pandemic, right? And so that's not only globally, that's also even narrowing down to within the county that you're in and how they're navigating things. And so I think amongst planning with the senior leadership team here, it's been that instance of how flexible can we be? And as long as we are communicating with each other and doing our best to communicate to the various audiences we need to communicate with, so faculty, staff, students, parents, alumni, and then other partners,
right?
Then it's received well. And so I think, you know, from going from a place where it's, we're all going to return at this date with the adjusted calendar, to then, you know, with our COVID-19 coordinator saying, you know, with the research and the data, it's probably best that we go with a staggered approach, and being able to shift and being able to do so. And then, you know, having drills where folks are doing examples of, okay, if this were to happen, how do we navigate this? Who do we communicate with? And just being able to see that, whether I'm actually in the meetings or from afar, you know, again, gives me a lot of appreciation for the community I've been able to join, because we are doing our best to think critically about keeping people safe, giving them an opportunity to learn in the traditional way that they were expecting to, but also being flexible for those that have selected to study remotely, and trying to make sure that our faculty are prepared to be able to deliver a hybrid type of education, because they have classes where they've got students in person and doing it remotely, and trying to do our best to prepare something strong and of quality for them. So I think those things have been critical. And I think the other piece is along the lines of communication, making sure that information is shared at an appropriate time and in a consistent way. And so when you think about many institutions having dashboards so that folks around the community can always have a place to check to see how are things going in your community. And I think that idea, which again, in higher ed and probably in other industries, there's not a lot of new initiatives. There are borrowed initiatives, because you've seen somebody else doing something that's really awesome. And that's how we saw others doing the dashboard. Yes, we should do a dashboard. But in that, what do we want to have on the dashboard? How do we want to deliver the information? And at what point in time do we want to deliver the information? No different than we knew most of higher ed would be testing students in some capacity. But you had the option. Do you test them when they get back to campus? Do you test them before they return? You know, thinking through all those different things has been of value. So I think those are the things that we've had to think about as we navigated the pandemic, is being swift on our feet, thinking about critical and timely communication, being as transparent as possible, but also being flexible, not only with each other, but within the folks that we're leading and supporting and navigating the pandemic.
It's unbelievable. I mean, when I think about everything you just described, it's as if you or anybody in higher education who's doing leadership work in particular had to rethink, I don't know, what do you think, 75, 80% or more of what you are doing? You have to rethink how you have meetings with your groups. You have to rethink everything about the student experience. I mean, what an incredible amount of learning you all have had to do since March, to both to get through the end of one school year, to get through a summer, to gear up for a new school year. It's remarkable. How do you personally then, that's a lot, right? and I think particularly about your first example of bringing grace to meetings and understanding the complexity of people's lives and how that has changed in the face of the pandemic. I think there are some people who are kind of throwing up their hands. They're absolutely overwhelmed. How do you keep from being overwhelmed?
It probably goes back to the start of our conversation, Mary Angela. It's giving it to God, especially in those tense times. You know, I tend to live in the optimistic space. Okay. You know, I tend to think positively as much as I can. Mm-hmm. I try to give others the benefit of the doubt as much as I can. And so in the moments when I'm struggling to do those things, I try to give it to God. But I also am mindful that at some point I've got to turn the work off and get to my family and enjoy my family. Mm-hmm. And then I think outside of that, that third wheel is what is it giving me an opportunity to learn?
Oh,
what is it giving me an opportunity to think critically about that I haven't had the chance to think about? Okay. You know, I think we now know much more about disinfecting than we had to. You know, I don't think we had thought about wastewater testing or sewage testing before now in the way that we broadly probably have a sense of. Mm-hmm. I don't think that we would have been as understanding and flexible when it comes to mask requirements in different environments,
right?
And how to navigate that, or the volume of signage, and trying to reorient yourself on, well, I used to use these set of steps to go up and down,
right?
And I can only use them to go up, and if I'm going up and down, I'm signaling to the rest of the folks that these signs don't mean anything. So what can I do to be more thoughtful and to be more prepared in navigating those things? So again, it goes back to that first set of foundational pieces, and that's how I feel like I can contribute, as well as watching and observing how my peers are adjusting to it as well. I think sometimes there's this sense that you can only learn from those that, from an org structure perspective, are above you or on adjacent to you. Mm-hmm. And I think you can learn a whole lot from those that, from an organizational chart perspective, are below you as well. And so just having those opportunities to have conversations with different colleagues, different teammates amongst the two units, and just gleaming as much as I can from them. Again, some of which have been in the role and in this space, and they have the history, they have the context that I don't have as a newbie, and truly utilizing that information to give me that sense of, you know what, we can do this, we can get through this. Mm-hmm. Yes, that may not have been the decision that I thought would have been the best one, but within the broader approach, I'm not the expert in that space. So how do I come along now that the decision has been made and support that decision, and then align the team and the unit that I'm leading to make sure that we're adjacent and in alignment with that as well?
Mm-hmm. I'm just really struck by the humble, optimistic, open perspective that you're trying to bring to every aspect of your work, right? That as a learner, as a thinker, as a teammate, as a colleague, it's really remarkable. And it's so clear from your examples how it pervades, those values pervade every aspect of the work that you do. And optimism was an interesting one that you mentioned. You said, I try to remain optimistic as much as possible in every respect. Our country's in a time where I think a lot of people have really lost the capacity for optimism or are really struggling to maintain it. So this is the transition, DJ. Can you talk to us a little bit about your thoughts about leadership in this time when we are bringing, when people are dying and are protesting and are trying to bring a positive, constructive attention to the remaining problem of systemic racism in our society?
You know, this is a very tough topic for a lot of us right now. And so whether you're thinking about how you identify, and if you identify in the majority, or if you identify, you know, as Black or African American in the moment, and you're just tired and you're stressed and navigating it. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's that notion of the willingness to step into this uncomfortable space, because mm-hmm. the only way you're going to be able to move forward is if you actually step into it. Mm-hmm. And not only just stepping into it and having a presence, but also before you get there, confirming with yourself that you're going to be willing to be vulnerable with your feelings, be vulnerable with your thoughts, be vulnerable with what you know and what you don't know, and be willing to contribute all of that to the dialogue moving forward. I think it's also this notion or this idea, and it makes me think about John Maxwell. One of my favorite books that he wrote was The 360-Degree Leader. And it's this notion that you can lead from anywhere. So it's not just this notion that, oh, it's only the senior leaders who can lead, or it's only the administrative leaders who can lead. It's only the people that have somebody that they directly supervise that can lead. It's like you can lead from any moment. And in this instance, it may be contributing your voice. It may be contributing to conversations that are happening in the background to inform, to educate, and to shape perspective. Mm-hmm. It's really just thinking through who you are and how can you contribute. I think sometimes there can be these forces, whether it's in your circle, those you work with, or just out in social media land, there can be these forces that may be pushing you and pressing you to try to do something and try to contribute in something that is unnatural to you. And may not be within the vein of your strength. Mm-hmm. And so you've really got to think through that. Or sometimes it requires you to lean on others that are in your circle to support you to say, you know, hey, you need to think about what can you contribute from your space of strength in that conversation? How do you contribute and help the group move forward? And so when I think about the conversations that we've had here, you know, one, I appreciated the dialogue at the senior leadership level that we weren't just trying to get a statement out and then that was it. Right. Like, okay, we're getting a statement out because we need to say this, but then we're going to revert back to normal, right? Right. And then the conversation continued on, well, what can we do and how do we do this? You know, the things that we are asking others on campus to do, how do we also demonstrate that we are willing to do it as well as senior leaders? Because again, as I referenced earlier, we never make it just because we're senior leaders. It doesn't mean we've maxed out on our potential and we're just there. Right. Right. And so, you know, our senior leadership team has navigated the IDI or the Intercultural Diversity Inventory at others on campus do it. And so there's that assessment for the senior leadership team as a whole, and then there's that assessment for you as an individual. Mm-hmm. Where are you now and how are you going to help yourself and the group move toward the next space on the spectrum, right? Right. And then holding each other accountable and continuing to have those conversations. Mm-hmm. I believe many of us on the senior leadership team participated in the 21-day United Way Race and Equity Challenge, right? Okay. And so within our individual selves saying, okay, we're going to do this, whether we feel knowledgeable or not, or somewhere across the spectrum, we're going to engage and participate in this. We are going to participate in an upcoming series from University of Southern California, through their Race and Equity Center. They have an Equity Now series, and our chief diversity officer pointed it out to us as a senior leadership team. And we're like, you know, everybody responded quickly, like, we're going to do this. Now, when we're available to do it may differ just because of everything happening within our own spaces. Mm-hmm. But again, to see that commitment to that. Or more recently, you know, the president led us in kind of just navigating Martin Luther King's, you know, letter from jail, right? And so really digesting it and thinking through what stood out to us, what was it about that is still timely and relatable to what's happening now? Mm-hmm. And then thinking through how does it reflect on our work as an institution, what things have been built within our system that create some of these challenges and make them longstanding, and what are we willing to reflect on and think critically about and change so that we are truly moving our institution forward in a long-term way, not just in a short-term band-aid approach. And then putting together a committee of sorts, an ad hoc committee to provide 37 recommendations on things that we can do in the short term and the long term that cross the spectrum of safety. They cross the spectrum of navigating difference. They cross the spectrum of being extracurricular to curricular. And so really thinking through all of these different pieces and to say, okay, now that we've got these recommendations, how do we demonstrate to our campus community that we're not just going to put these on a shelf and say, well, we've got the recommendations,
right,
but to truly demonstrate to them over time that we are working on those things in a timely way while we're still doing the things that we need to do to move the university forward. So those are the things that I think have stood out within this space. And I think it's also thinking through, what do you do in your own individual homes, in your own individual circles? Mm-hmm. For us, it was having the opportunity to have some tough conversations with our children who are all biracial, but the world may just see them as Black.
Right.
And so trying to help them at their ages navigate how they might start to be seen, how they might start recognizing these things, to be able to go to DC and to, you know, walk right into a couple of what I would deem positive protests confirming that Black Lives Matter, and being able to speak to them about what that means and why they're doing it. And to then know that my oldest daughter has recently participated on her own accord, a protest to confirm that Black Lives Matter. And so it's one of those things where you're trying to educate and inform them on what's happening, what historically has happened, but then allow them to step into the space on their own accord to navigate it in a way that they feel best. And so it was helpful and you know, touched my heart to see her willingness to do that, and understanding of what it meant in that moment. You know, it's nice. Sometimes people may see, oh, I can wear a Black Lives Matter shirt. You know, it's catchy, it's themey. It's
right.
Well, you need to understand what it means if you're going to wear that shirt. You need to understand how you may be perceived if you wear that shirt. And you also need to be prepared for the reactions that you may receive because of what you are signaling by wearing it. And so I'm wearing it and I'm wearing my Black Lives Matter bracelet because I am comfortable within my own skin to communicate and articulate, yes, this is what it means. Mm-hmm. You know, when we got signage prepared for our campus, it was one of those things where, you know, we have Black Lives Matter signage on campus, which connects to our anti-racism starts here site for Susquehanna. And to then say, you know what, we want the signage, we want the stickers, we want to be able to not just say the university has said this, but we have said that as well, and to be able to signal those things. So again, I think it's navigating those tough conversations as senior leaders. It's the commitment of senior leaders to navigate it. And it's also to be able to say, we are doing this to mirror what we want to see and expect out of our campus community. You may have seen during the time of the George Floyd or Breonna Taylor murders, what was happening in higher ed, you started to see things come up where students had made some type of racist statement or done something that then allowed schools to be in position to rescind admission decisions.
Yes.
And we, though it may not have reached news, we were in a similar boat to navigate that as well. And one of the things we thought about doing was, one, how do we signal our mission as a university moving forward? And so one of the things we decided to do was to make some adjustments to our application platforms so that when students are finishing up their application, they have to review a statement. It doesn't mean they are saying, I agree and I am going to do X. But the statement is saying, hey, as a reminder, you are applying to us and this is what we stand for. And we support a community that comes together that is inclusive and celebrates difference. You are making the decision to push submit, but you know that this is what we're signaling. But also then to signal, hey, if by chance something happens or occurs based on your actions or behaviors that doesn't align with this mission, we do have the ability and the authority to then alter that decision because we want to be mindful of who we're introducing into our campus community. And so again, it's when you're thinking about navigating it from a leadership perspective, it's also thinking about what can I do?
Yes.
How do I contribute and what am I signaling? The last piece is bringing it up in conversation. So when there were racial tensions that happened during my time, our time at Knox, Mary Angela, I wasn't knowledgeable enough. I wasn't probably mentally strong enough And I just hadn't been exposed to all those other things. I hadn't been exposed to activism in that way, in the way in which it was happening with our students at Knox at that time, which hindsight 2020, I value and appreciate very much. But I also had only been raised with one lens of, you know what, you just got to be tougher. You just got to run 10 times faster. This is how it's going to be. And so I wasn't willing to entertain the idea of, but it doesn't have to be, and we can create the change. And so now I'm in those moments where it's like, well, guess what? If I don't share and am not willing to be vulnerable with my division to say, hey, this is how I am feeling because of what happened to George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, nobody else is going to do it. And it doesn't mean that they don't want to, but I think it was up to me to say, hey, I'm going to bring it up because I have the opportunity, I have the platform to do so. And I want you to know that we can have these tough conversations, these difficult conversations. We've got to be mindful of what's happening in society and how it's going to make other people feel. And that was the first time I was willing to do that. And I just feel like it's got to that point where I've been able to mature and to develop and understand.
DJ, you are an incredible leader. This has been such a wonderful conversation. I am so grateful to you, and I really hope that people are listening to the careful way that you are talking about these things and the vulnerability and the critical thinking and the authenticity that you bring to this conversation, I think is so powerful. Thank you so much for joining me today. I am really grateful to you, and best of luck with your work at Susquehanna University. Thanks everyone for listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio.
You've been listening to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with Dr. Mary Angela McGuire on Transformation Talk Radio. Join me next time as we continue to practice mindfulness and challenge ourselves to change. If you'd like to find out more about my work or contact me, please go to my website, McGuireLifeCoach.com. That's McGuireLifeCoach.com. See you next time.
The music for Nothing But Now was created by Salt Theory. Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.